This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Even though severe cases can be rare, respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is still the leading cause of hospitalization in babies under one. RSV often begins like a cold or the flu, but can quickly spread to your baby's lungs. Ask your doctor about preventative antibodies for your baby this season, and visit protectagainstrsv.com. The information presented is for general educational purposes only. Please ask your healthcare provider about any questions regarding your health or your baby's health.
This is The Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Internet world, West Alabama. How we doing today on this Thursday? Welcome in. It's the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are checking us out on the Bama Central YouTube channel, listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, maybe on the Bama Central Facebook page. We appreciate everybody who's finding us on their favorite podcast, Spotify platforms, internet platforms, listening to the show. Gonna have a fun show today. Katie Windham back in action today. She's gonna join us about 8:30, about 30 minutes into the program. If you're listening to this on playback, Katie Windham's gonna join us to make us a whole lot smarter. We missed her last week. We're going to have a lot of fun today with our friend Mason Woods. We're live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. You can follow Mason Woods at MAWoods_ on the Twitter machine, reading all of his recruiting work for the Walsh Riding Network. We're going to have fun in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. We're right here off McFarland Boulevard, just past the Tiger Rock, on the left. You can call Derek today at 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Red Reese and Victoria are upstairs. They would love to speak with you. They would love to give you a quick auto insurance quote, make sure that you understand your policies, understand your coverage, and make sure that you know that you got somebody local that has your back. Call Derek Daniel and his team at 205-758-3391. Going to have a little bit of fun today. What did I write down on the sheet today, Mason Woods? I wrote down, I want to talk about top 10 college football jobs. I want to talk about Nick Saban's new college football job, maybe. And I want to talk about Alabama softball last night. Obviously, we will wait for Katie to join us to get to let us know Alabama softball losing to South Carolina 6-2. They opened up. Audrey Vandegrift hit a leadoff home run. I guess it was the first, I read it was the first Alabama home run to lead off a game since 2019. And I thought, oh, great, you're rocking and rolling. Here we go. First batter over the fence. They got a lady, they ended up working a lady all the way to third and in to score that same inning. Two runs in the first inning, nothing else. So the ladies are done in the SEC tournament, losing to South Carolina. We will hear from Katie Windham about their postseason prospects. Obviously, they will be in the postseason. We can just go ahead and spoiler alert, they're in. And just like last year, you're right there on the line of are you hosting a regional or not? And so, like, all you guys that have jumped ship this year, this team stinks, this team, I don't like them, blah, blah, blah. Well, they could be hosting a postseason regional again. And so I think the team's done fairly well in a very difficult SEC, obviously. Could be better. We're not going to shy away from that. But done fairly well on a really difficult SEC, and we will hear from Katie Windham about 25 minutes from now, 30 minutes from now. With that, Mason, good morning.
Good morning, you know. Oh, man.
You all right?
Yeah, doing good.
I know. That was just like, I just had to get it all out. I'm sorry.
I got to lock in here, you know. I had to... I got to wake up a little bit. No, I'm doing good this morning. Happy to be here, you know, as always on the show. You mentioned covering the recruiting. I did get to cover a couple things.
Tidbits.
Alabama, you know, seems like everybody wants to name Alabama as a finalist over the last couple weeks or so. And, you know, last night there was another one. came, you know, late afternoon or so, four-star athlete Roman Voss, and probably going to be a tight end, I think. Maybe a safety. He plays quarterback, tight end, and safety, and some cornerback. Like, he does everything. Seems like he's probably going to be more of a tight end, though. I think he's like 6'4", 240, you know, right? You know, pretty good athlete, seems like. Wasn't able to gather a whole lot about him. There was not really even stats available for him online anywhere that I could find. So, you know, I reached out to him to see if I could maybe hear back, but nothing back so far. So maybe we can get something in the future.
Roman Voss. All
good
right.
Name.
That is a great name.
Good name.
So here's a ancillary project. If you're bored, if you get bored and you're like, man, I haven't written anything today, which that never happens to you because you're always writing stuff for the Walsh Writing Network. But if you ever have like a writer's block moment, that's what you ought to do. Scroll through the 2026, scroll through the 24/7s, the On3 Sports, the Rivals, and make your own all 22 name team. Quarterback, you know, Johnny Heisman, you know, running back, you know, Speedy McSpeederson, mm-hmm. You know.
We've already got Booby Feaster.
Perfect. You know? I didn't want to like make one. I didn't want to like put some bad name on a kid, but like, I like Rock, like Rock Montgomery would have made the list. From Alabama a couple years ago. That was a great one. Justin Okoronkwo a couple years ago too. I mean, not as much. I mean, yes, the German name, but like we're looking for like Booby Feaster is a great one. Goodness gracious. Does Sedarian Morgan have a nickname?
Not that I'm aware of.
Like Cyborg, like Killer.
CM1, I think, is kind of what he does. Right.
So there's an ancillary idea. If you ever get bored, hey, all name team. Here's the best names that Alabama's recruiting. from an aesthetic. What was it? Dakoldis Crawford.
Oh, yeah. He spent so long in college, too. Dakoldis Crawford. He went from LSU for a while, and he was in Nebraska. That's where he did his infamous HVAC ad. Oh man!
Next, what was it? Key and Peele, their skit. Yeah. So there's an idea right there. Okay, so let's have a college football conversation before we get Katie Windham on, and let's go with the easiest stuff first. Let's talk about. Look, y'all follow On3 Sports. You're all up with Andy Staples, Ari Wasserman, talk show hosts, kind of pundits, writers. These guys recently put out their top 10 jobs, their top 10 college football jobs. And I have always been in the camp that Alabama is a top three job. I mean, debate with your mama. You can say one, two, or three. It's fine. I agree with you. One, two, or three, I agree. But these gentlemen who do cover college athletics and are very intelligent, I will say that on the outset, have Alabama as the seventh best college football job in the landscape of the NCAA right now. Obviously, NIL is probably a little bit of a factor in this. I'm not going to cry too much about seven. I'm going to cry about some of the names that they have above seven. So Mason Woods, just right off the bat, here we go. I'll read you Andy Staples, then I'll read you Ari Wasserman's, and then you can open up and just whatever you want to say. All right, Andy Staples and Ari Wasserman both have, Andy has Georgia 1, Ari has Texas 1. Andy has Ohio State 2, Ari has Georgia 2. Andy has Texas 3, Ari has Ohio State 3. Oregon 4 for both of them. LSU 5 for Andy Staples, Texas A&M 5 for Ari Wasserman, 6 LSU or Notre Dame, excuse me, for Andy Staples, and 6 LSU for Ari Wasserman. There we go. And now both Alabama at 7, 8, 9, and 10. Michigan, Clemson, Penn State for Staples, Michigan, Notre Dame, Oklahoma for Wasserman.
7.
I guess my first is Alabama becoming a worse job year after year because of how far you're falling behind in NIL. You asked this question 2-3 seasons ago. Yes, Alabama probably is a hands down top 3 job in the country because they were on the forefront of this. Nick Saban kind of knew it was coming. I understand he tried to fight against it a bit, but he saw the writing on the wall. But now Alabama does not have $40 million to throw at a roster like some of, you know, the Ohio States, the Texases, and the Oregons have, the Texas A&Ms, you know, and so on and so forth. Notre Dame, even Michigan, a lot of these teams. So I'm wondering if that is the reason this job is being pushed down the board here. And to me, that would be a valid reason. I think, obviously you have ridiculous pressure from the fans in Alabama, so that is going to knock you down a few pegs. But the football culture here is unmatched. The, you know, a lot of the the talent in this area of the country is, you know, you have the best talent at your disposal, basically, between Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, Texas, even, you know, all of these southeastern states. But yeah, the NIL things, you've kind of got one hand tied behind your back a little bit there. And then also, the fans of Tuscaloosa are not the most understanding people.
All right. I don't disagree with any of that.
I do think Ohio State is a clear number one.
All right. Yeah. Over Texas?
Yes. Because the pressure is like you get there's so much more breathing down your neck at Texas than there is at Ohio State to me. At Ohio State, I think everybody up there, they know, like, they're Ohio State. They're the team.
They're the team, but if they didn't win the national championship this year, it would have gotten really, really bad for Ryan Day.
Maybe
it would have, after losing to Michigan, it would have gotten, I think, really, really difficult for him.
I
think you're right that Ohio State probably is the clear number one because of the, I'm sorry, outside of your top three or four teams in the Big Ten, who are you competing with, really?
Then you have enough money to just go get the skill position guys that you can't necessarily recruit out of the transfer portal.
Right, right. So I agree with you. Ohio State needs to be one or two on all these lists. I don't like the Georgia in the top three for both these guys. Like, of course, Kirby has built it into a monster, and I don't want to disrespect Kirby at all. I don't want to make it sound like it is disrespectful to him, but they're dealing with a little bit of the same elements that Alabama is, but I think Georgia's a little wealthier just as far as the NIL goes. But largely the same. We're talking minuscule. We're talking degrees here. We're talking same families, just degrees of differences. I think their degrees financially probably a little better. But three seems just
overrated to me. Three or one, both of those. I would place Oregon over to the Georgia job.
Yeah, to me, it's Ohio State. It's Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, in whatever order you want it.
Those
right
are the
now.
Top three, yeah.
And then it's, to me, I'm sorry, this is Homer, but Alabama's four. Just on programmatic tradition is such a big thing to me. Nick Saban comes here in 2007. Does Nick Saban, you know, we've played this game before, maybe not on this program, but when Nick Saban leaves the Miami Dolphins and comes to Tuscaloosa, if he goes to anywhere else, pick your school, I don't care. If he goes to anywhere else, does he turn it into the same juggernaut in the same fashion? No, I would argue no. Yeah. I would argue Saban still wins national championships, sure. Probably more than one. Does he win six? I would say no. And does he win his first one in 3 years? Does he go undefeated in his second year? I would say no. I think the infrastructure, like, it was bad in 06. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, building falling apart, crumbling kind of thing. But the base was there.
Yeah. You just needed somebody who could work with what you had and not just continue to crumble what you had, which is kind of what they had been on a run on there for a while.
Nick Saban looked and goes, I just need to rehammer this board. Gotta
get some Bondo over here, you know,
pour some concrete, and this bad boy's gonna be rolling. I think the him coming to it's Nick Saban was extremely special, and I don't want to take anything away from him. Absolutely super special, but it's the marriage with the University of Alabama that it just make you see that, you know, that meme that like has all the neurons firing. It's like both together make the neurons fire. I think Alabama,
I think Clemson is a bit underrated on this list.
Would you take anyone over Alabama at four? I have a hard time going to Alabama over Texas, Oregon, or Ohio State based on the money. Based on the money, based on the branding,
yes,
all of that.
The money thing, yeah, obviously. But at four,
like, get out of here with Texas A&M at five, Ari Wasserman. Get out of here with even Notre Dame, even LSU.
Yeah. Clemson intrigues me.
Why?
Feels like there's just not a lot of pressure over there. Everybody, you know, everybody's just happy to be here. Everybody, your fans are going to follow you around no matter what you do. You're gonna carry their $2 bills with them, except for Tyler
and Spartanburg. Why do you why do you deserve $4 million, Dabo?
You know, now that Dabo has turned them into what they are, if you're stepping into that job, you're already up at this level on recruiting, and that you carry that power with your name already. So, you know, that job just intrigues me, basically because there's just almost no pressure there. I think, you know, there to an extent, sure, but you know, I think a lot of it is just, hey man, if we're relevant, we're pretty happy. We're a little old Clemson. So I would maybe put that job higher just for that. Now, as far as actually competing for stuff and having the money and the resources, I don't know where they stand. It doesn't seem like they have a ton.
I don't know that they've actually like
done it.
Tried. Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know. I do think they're invested in NIL,
sure,
but I don't think that they've really like, hey, we got to get to $100 million.
Yeah. I don't know about
our NIL is G-O-D.
Yeah. Do they even have a collective that we know of? Like, I don't know of one. But no, that job, it seems better than 9 or not in the top 10 at all to me.
Their NIL, their collective is the Clemson Exchange. Okay. The Clemson Exchange, RAIN, yeah, I think is what it's called here. All right, great. Clemson's Tiger Rag. Tiger Impact. Clemson's Tiger Impact. So they've got a couple of little Tiger Impact, founded on April 2020. Yeah. All right. We're trying. I just think you're going for the clickbait here, having Alabama at 7.
Yeah.
And we're falling for it, but we're also appreciative of, you know, the easy content here. Just, all right. Andy Staples list. LSU at 5, Notre Dame 6. I don't really have a whole lot of problems with anything other than those two. Georgia, I have a little problem. Like, is the Georgia job better than an Alabama job?
I don't really think it's any different. Yeah, I think they're virtually the same.
You're under immense pressure now because you think the Alabama fans are bad? The Georgia fans are in my family. The Georgia fans are in my family, and my father is telling them, remember when we only won 8 games a year? Remember when we only won 10 games? Like, my father is the objective one, and I love him for it because people are, well, Kirby didn't win a title at family reunions. They failed. Hey, Kirby didn't win.
And they had a smaller taste of it.
Exactly. Like, that's the point. And my father sitting in the corner just like silently like, you dummies. I
remember Mark Richt.
Like, dad's in school with Herschel Walker. Like, he's been through, Jim Donnan, like, and Ray Goff. Yeah, like you've been through some bad times. And so you're sitting here watching. I can remember being at the dinner table when Rick was kind of let go and they brought in Kirby, and everybody was all juiced up, and my father was like, it's not a sure thing. It's not a sure thing. My dad was all, we've won 8 or more games for the last decade and a half. We've been doing good.
That was my thing.
He was like, this could turn out to be crumble.
Yeah.
But he's like, he acknowledged that it could have been, and obviously it has been now, national championship worthy. But now the flip side, Kirby's taking you there, and now any year that he has last year, them dogs are just no good. Them dogs stink all year long. I'll get in, you know, Georgia, they were struggling on offense a little bit with Carson Beck and to run the football. Carson Beck's terrible. The worst. It's like you must have forgot some of the bad quarterbacks. You saw Joe Cox play quarterback at Georgia. So
former tight end coach Joe Cox,
current tight end coach.
Oh yeah, he still is here.
Yeah. Oh, Dad. Like, we just went on a tangent there. I don't know how we got into that, but I don't see this Alabama and Georgia job as being very different here. Kirby's taking, you know, they've got expectations. Oh, that's where we got there. The Georgia expectations versus the Alabama expectations. I think the fan bases are fairly 1-to-1. You know, they're not going to like that when they look at each other. Oh, that person, we're not Georgia fans. We don't look like Georgia fans, and the Georgia fans vice versa. We're not Alabama fans. We don't act like them.
Sure.
Like, yes, you do. You both act the same exactly. Mm-hmm. Have the same pressure. You didn't win by 40. Terrible game. So I think the coach, like, the pressure situation is the same. The competition is the same in the SEC. Your recruiting base is largely the same. Sure. What am I missing here that makes Georgia 1 and Alabama 7 on Staples' list, or Georgia 2 and Alabama 7? Is it just recency of wins?
Maybe. I don't know. The only thing I can guess is that they have some information about the NIL that maybe we do not. But it, I, from everything I've seen, I don't have any reason to believe that Georgia is, you know, up there with the Texases and Ohio States as far as what they're spending on their roster. So I do not know. Like you said, probably just, and we're falling for it, probably just a little bit of a clickbait thing.
Well, it's the offseason. The Staples is the same guy. I'm pretty sure Staples put Auburn in his way too, in his too early top 25, like what, 6 weeks ago, five Something weeks like ago? That, yeah. And it was like, oh, I can't believe he would do that. I'm like, they might be.
Joe Cox did leave us, by the way, for Ole Miss.
No!
Yeah, he is at Ole Miss. I thought I remembered that. He went over there with Lane.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Brian Ellis is the tight ends coach. What a dummy. Brian Ellis coached the tight ends all year last year. Joe? From Georgia Southern. Former offensive coordinator from Georgia Southern. Oh! Where are we here?
Oh, man. I don't understand what makes Georgia that much better of a job. I I'm trying not to be a homer here because, you know, it's hard for me to admit that Texas is as good of a job as it is.
But I just Ohio State, Texas, and Oregon.
Those
come on,
are
guys.
Very clearly your top three.
Like, it sucks to say that as taking a backseat, but when Alabama can drop $40 million on a rock, then we can chat. Because equal footing branding wise, equal footing historic, absolutely. It's just a little resource inequality.
Yeah. The longer I think about it, the more I maybe would just put Oregon number one.
I mean,
because for all the reasons you mentioned, the few bad reasons you mentioned for Ohio State, Oregon doesn't have any of those.
What's the pressure on Dan Lanning?
I mean, you're gonna slaughter Washington every season.
Your only
rivalry game,
Oregon State,
or Oregon State, yeah,
the Civil War.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, your recruiting is basically done for you.
You're competing against Southern Cal in your recruiting.
Yeah,
like as far as your,
you know, I mean, you got one guy breathing down your neck, I guess, is Phil Knight, and I don't think he's that scary of a man. Probably back him down and be like, "Hey, get out, buddy." And that might be my number one.
I think you're making a great case, honestly. All right, let's shift gears here before we get Katie on. That's what I want to do. I want to tell you about Derry Daniels State Farm. We are live in the Derry Daniels State Farm studios just off of McFarland Boulevard. Call Derek and his team at 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Home, life, auto insurance, boaters insurance. You know the weather's about to get nice. Boaters insurance, renters insurance. You're about to move apartments across town. This is the season for that. Make sure you have the proper renters insurance because those landlords do not care about your stuff in your apartment. If there are bad things that happen, you'll be liable for it unless you call Derry Daniel and get yourself some renters insurance. 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Red Reese and Victoria are upstairs. They would love to talk to you. You can talk to them and just say, hey, talk about your policies. They'll run you a quick quote, give you all the information that you need quickly, efficiently. You can make your decision, get off the phone, get back to your life. Call Derek and his team again, 205-758-3391. All right, brother, we got Katie Windham joining us in just a little bit. Follow her at @KatieWindham_. She's going to lead us with the Alabama softball coverage, but I will get her perspectives on this next topic. We got to talk about Nick Saban. Nick Saban's staying busy in retirement. Nick Saban is staying busy. Last week, oh man, Dax texts me. He's like, you let your mask fall a little too much. And I was like, all right, thank you. Appreciate that. He's right. Nick Saban last week spent a little bit of time with President Trump, and it sounds like that time has resulted in a little bit of news policy. I'm not quite sure exactly the way to describe it.
I don't know if anyone else. I don't know if anyone that's doing it is quite sure of what's happening either.
Sure. So the way that I understand this, Nick Saban, I mean, this is straight from the Athletics headline. Nick Saban to co-chair President Trump's planned commission on college athletics. And so they meet last week here in Tuscaloosa for however long and spend some time. And obviously they spent some time together before. Coach Saban has been in Washington, oh gosh, eight times, 10 times in the last 3 years, 2 years, talking about NIL. He's been there a handful of times with Greg Byrne as well. So he's been doing this. This isn't out of left field. What how I understand it. Okay, I'm just going to take this straight from the straight from the Athletic's article here. The New York Times and Wall Street Journal reported Trump was interested in weighing in with an executive order after the president spoke last week with Saban, who has expressed, and he's been expressing this, concern that college sports is being harmed by big money pouring into it to compensate athletes with little regulation. Yahoo Sports first reported Wednesday that Trump is planning to create a presidential commission to examine a long list of issues facing college sports, from booster-funded payment and transfer rules to conference alignment and Title IX. Nick Saban is going to be the co-chair of this commission, along with Texas Tech's Board of Regents Chairman Cody Campbell. So together, Saban and Campbell are going to basically lead this commission that, the way that I understand it, will put together a report on each of these issues, or the report will encapsulate or speak about each of these issues. Mm-hmm. And so they will, okay, here's what we think about booster funded payment. Here's what we think about transfer portal rules. This is the way transfer portal rules are right now. You guys all know them. And this is the way we think that could fix them. This is conference alignment. You guys all know the Big Ten is an absolute mess. We need to get back to regional conferences. I'm sorry, that's my stance, and I will fight anyone on it. We need to get back to regional conference alignment. And then Title IX, extremely important, and I think people are massively...
I think nobody really thinks about it.
Oh, gosh. I think they're not thinking about it at all right now with what's going on in Washington. So I don't think anything is changing right now. Nothing is changing. I think that Nick Saban and this Cody Campbell are essentially... being tapped to, hey guys, why don't you give me your expert opinion? And here, you want me to surprise some people? Well done, President Trump. You go out and you find the de facto best coach that you can in college athletics, who has seen, you want to go find the best women's diving coach? You want to go find the best volleyball coach? No disrespect to the best volleyball coach in the country, sure, but Nick Saban basically is the face of college athletics over the last two decades. So let's get him involved. We've all been talking for the last 4 or 5 years. Nick Saban would be the perfect commissioner for college football. So why don't we just, hey man, why don't you just give us your expert opinion here? Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, we don't want to, leave the other side out. We got to get a money guy in here. This Cody Campbell is the co-chair of the Matador Club, of the Matador Club, the NIL collective that we talked about 2 or 3 days ago.
This is where my skepticism comes in. This feels like the meme of the guy in the hot dog costume being, we're all trying to find the guy who did this.
Okay.
We just got done ranting about how Texas Tech has spent all of this money and they've raised all of, like, this, that's the exact problem. It's exactly what he did. It's like, well, I don't really know that he's going to be the guy to fix it. I think he's going to be there to keep Saban from trying to fix it. He's going to be there to say, well, yeah, but we need to make sure that everybody can make all their money and that we can get our hands in everything. I don't think he's going to be there to make things go smoothly at all. He's there solely to keep the rich guys happy.
You don't think that he's there to say, we're paying these athletes X million dollars and my business isn't getting any better. We're paying Billy's.
I mean, this Billy is the first year ball. They've done it, so I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
I'm paying Billy Sports Ball to be my spokesperson, and his commercials, nobody's clicking on his commercials.
Maybe. Possibly. I hope that's the case. I'm weary.
So Mike Florio this morning, who I do not care for.
No,
I'll just say it. I think he's not a very good media person.
I've heard people say that he writes NFL fan fiction, and I tend to agree with that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. But he blasts Nick Saban today. He goes and, well, Nick Saban needs to stay retired, and goes, oh, Nick Saban swooping in to protect the system that made him millions of dollars. And Nick Saban, swooping in to keep the money out of the kid's pocket. I don't know enough to say yes or no on any of that. Now, because, look, it is unregulated. The athletes are seriously taking advantage of the system right now.
Yes, absolutely. And they hold every bit of the power.
And, like, look, as a somewhat younger person still for another year, I always am kind of pulling for the athlete right there. Like, okay, yeah, make get your money. I did send that to Katie, didn't I? Not that I really need her, but we're rolling. Okay, yeah, just checking. All right, cool. Oh, Bert, she just jumped in the back end. Just making sure. I've always been pro-athlete and pro-making the money, but you've got to have some sort of structure here. We're past the point of, oh, these kids are being taken advantage of. Now it's flipped the other way. Can we find some middle ground?
Yeah. It's classically two wrongs do not make a right. Like, it is just because athletes got taken advantage of for a long time does not mean that now, because you hold this power, you get to turn it around and flip it on them and say, oh, we're going to kill college football. Like, that's, I will stand for you. I will root for the athletes right up until the point where they start killing the sport. And that's where we've gotten.
All right. So the only other complication here comes from what's actually going on with the House versus the NCAA settlement court case that's close but not close. And yeah. I think they are working to get the I believe that what I read yesterday was that you are getting rosters grandfathered in, which is a hugely positive thing for really everybody in football, and really all the walk-ons in their careers. You're not having to go look for other opportunities. But you can't just – like – Steve Berman, okay, here's his settlement. Basically, Steve Berman is one of the attorneys working on this, and he essentially tells President Trump and Nick Saban to please leave us alone. Mm-hmm. We're almost close to this. His quote, Coach Saban and Trump's 11th hour talks of executive orders and other meddling are just more unneeded self-involvement. College athletes are spearheading historic changes and benefiting massively from NIL deals. They don't need this unmerited interference from a coach only seeking to protect the system that's made him tens of millions. So he's kind of taking the Mike Florio route as well. Maybe this is my own naivety because of how much I trust Nick Saban, but I bet you Coach Saban's going to we decide who's doing what on this commission. I bet you he's going to say, let's wait and see what this House settlement does, and then we'll dive in and see how we can.
I would think so.
I think this is a little preemptive.
Yeah, I think if either side wants to truly fix this, whether Nick Saban and, his camp want to fix it, or this case wants to be the one that fixes it, like, they need to work together to fix it. This is not going to be it's just insane. If either of them wanted to actually fix it, they would not be fighting against each other or telling the other one to keep out of it. So, again, maybe it's just blind faith in Nick Saban because he was my football coach, or our football coach, for a long time here in Tuscaloosa. But I trust the man. I think he truly has the sports interest in sports best interest in mind, not the big wigs, not the university, like the sport of college football. I think he has its best interest in mind.
Absolutely. Let's shift gears and get a lot smarter. Everett Osmer is already leading us on our way with a comment. Let me tell you, we're going to play our War and Tire ad. Then we're going to get Katie Windham in. We're going to talk about Alabama softball. We will get her opinion on, or her perspective on, Nick Saban's new job. A little college football. Is Alabama the seventh best college football job in college football? I've got a lot of questions for Katie from last week and this week, so let's get into it, all right, after we tell you about War and Tire.
So my name is Russ Warren, and I'm one of the owners here at Warren Tire. We started in 1961. My granddad on University Boulevard, so we've been kind of a staple here in the Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama community since then. And so thankful to be in the third generation. And we have two locations now in Tuscaloosa. We're right here at the 15th Street location right now, where we just do tires, brakes, and alignments mostly here. Our university location does oil changes, engine work, air conditioning work, front end work, the whole nine yards. And so any of our two locations, you can come check us out.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
It's Warren Tire and Auto sponsoring the program. We appreciate them joining us each and every day. And now we're joined by Katie Windham. You can follow Katie Windham at @KatieWindham_, leading all of our coverage at BamaCentral.com. Katie Windham was up late last night watching Alabama softball lose to South Carolina 6-2. Unfortunate events last night in Georgia. Good morning, Katie. How are we doing?
Good morning. I'm good. Yeah, that game last night was giving me like PTSD to the last 3 years of Alabama softball, basically. Just inning after inning of three up, three down, doing nothing offensively, which that has not been this team this year. It was this team basically the last three seasons, but not this year. So it's kind of like, what's going on? Really, the last four games, the offense hasn't been great. Obviously, something they would like to fix heading into the NCAA postseason.
So that's a perfect place to start with Katie Windham. Alabama softball losing to South Carolina, beating Auburn 3-2. I was watching the game and texting a friend, and did I jinx it? I went out after the second run. I said, oh, Alabama softball starting off pretty well, and then didn't score another run. I texted a friend in the middle of the game. I said, oh, they're about to lose. I can't score. What's... Obviously, I want to have an air of positivity, Katie, but we were going into the NCAA regionals. You've had an up and down, up and down regular season, especially in the SEC. Where do we stand? I know in our group chats and our work messages, you say, you know, I think this team still could. How do you feel now that the SEC tournament for at least this program is done?
I think this team will host regional still, just because their metrics are good. I think they definitely have the talent to make the Women's College World Series. I will say my attitude now compared to today's Thursday. So, yeah, literally 1 week ago when they run Rural South Carolina in game one of the series against the Gamecocks. And this team had the opportunity to be heading into postseason really peaking because they had won the Oklahoma series. They lost the series at Florida, but they could have won that series. Then they sweep Missouri. They go to South Carolina. They run and rolled that first game, and you're like, wow, you know, they could win three of their last four series in SEC play, have all these top 10 wins. Things are really rolling. Pitching's really turned a corner. Offense is, you know, continually doing good. And I think part of it was weather affected in that South Carolina series. It was unfortunate that game two gets stopped in the middle, and it was only 3-1, which, I mean, the offense didn't do anything else. So, I mean, you know, maybe they never would have, but I think they could have. And so game two gets stopped, and I think the third inning gets picked back up on Friday morning, and then game three stops after five innings because of weather. Now, I don't think Alabama would have made a comeback in that game, but, and then they ended up finishing .500 in SEC play, having to play on Tuesday at the SEC tournament. You know, a lot of things that this team did not want to do ended up happening because they lost those last two games at South Carolina. And so I think, okay, you kind of killed your momentum going into postseason. Can you turn it around? But really, even after they lost that game, they kind of had a good path in the SEC tournament. They play Auburn first, who is probably the most ideal team for them to play the first round. Metrics-wise, even though Auburn was last place in the SEC, they were actually higher in the RPI than Alabama. RPI is kind of weird in softball. But so that gave them the chance to get a quality win in the first round. And then they were going to play South Carolina, the team they just played. They just run rolled but lost the series. So you probably want revenge on the mind. Murph talked about that on the set after the game. Then they beat Auburn. Caleb Rowe told SEC Network before the game. They're kind of talking big talk. We're going to win this game. We want revenge on South Carolina. No motivation needed. They start out well, like you said. But really, that first inning, they have runners on second and third with one out. They've scored two runs already. Great. Great start. Lead off home run from Montre Vandegrift. And then Brooke Ellistad laid down a bunt, and even on the broadcast, they kind of talked about, was that, like, supposed to be a squeeze bunt? Did she just do that on her own? Because, like, squeeze bunts are an effective thing in softball a lot of times, but Marley Giles she didn't have a big lead off third. Like, she wasn't trying to score. So that kind of killed the momentum, which Brooke Ellistad has been one of Alabama's best hitters this season, their RBI leader, but she's 0 for her last 13. She was hitless against South Carolina in the series. She was hitless against Auburn. And so, you know, maybe she's just in her head a little bit right now. But you would like to think, you know, maybe at least in that scenario, second and third, one out, she could get a sack fly or something. Instead, she gets an out. And it really seemed like from that point on, the game, the momentum was just in South Carolina's favor. And so it's this team has not looked great the last four games, obviously. I really thought after the Oklahoma series, and then they kind of had a little snafus at Florida. But then Missouri series, they sweep them. Jocelyn Brisky has a complete game shutout in game three. I'm like, okay, she's really flipped her mentality. This is great for Alabama. If she is really the ace that she's capable of, they will be able to go far in the postseason. And then last night, she comes in relief, gives up four runs, two home runs to the same girl. And then she looked like she was not having a very good time mentally after she got taken out, was not happy with herself, which understandably, obviously you're not going to be happy with yourself after you give up four runs. But I think the mental game has been one of the biggest pieces for her this season that she struggled with. She's even talked about that. And it's still not there. And if you don't have a reliable arm in the circle, it's going to be really hard to make it to Oklahoma City. That was last year's team. The offense was horrible. They were. But they had Kayla Beaver. And she could beat anyone. And you just needed the key hit at times, and they just couldn't get it. But this year, they haven't been able to get the key hit, but the pitching has been so unreliable from week one, and it's still like that. And so I think this team still is capable of a run for sure, but I'm a little less, I don't know if optimistic is the right word, but, like, I'm thinking that that's less likely now. But then you never want to count out Murph in the postseason or this program, so – you know, it'll be waiting to see, and kind of see what their draw is as well, because that'll be big. If they end up as a host, which higher seed do they match up with in the Supers? If they don't end up as a host for the first time ever, where do they have to travel for regionals? They should host, but they did leave it a little bit in the committee's hands by losing last night and losing the series at South Carolina.
Let's hit Everett Osmer's question for you real quick. Everett Osmer joins us on the Facebook machine and asks Katie Windham. Question for Katie: who do you think will win it all in college softball? Let's pair this question with the current event, the SEC tournament. You've got Oklahoma, Texas, Tennessee, Texas A&M, all still alive. The top four seeds starting today. Why don't we get a prediction on the rest of the SEC tournament? And Everett's question: who is your national championship favorite at the moment?
The SEC is just so crazy this year because, like, Florida is, what, like, top five nationally, top three RPI, and they're the sixth seed in the SEC tournament, and then losing the first round to one of the worst teams in the SEC. So just the SEC, the depth from top to bottom is insane. So really, today is the day that the top four seeds are playing for the first time. They got that double bye. So Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas have been nice and rested. So I would think one of them will win the SEC tournament. You know, it's a lot of times you don't get a lot of doubles in softball where the same team wins the regular season and the tournament title. Would I be surprised at all if Oklahoma won? No, I would not. They did lose their last series of the regular season at Florida. So people thought Florida was going to have this momentum going into postseason, and they lose yesterday. So you just really never know in tournament play. But I'd probably say Oklahoma for the SEC. And then nationally, it's been a weird year in college softball. Obviously, if you keep up with the sport, you know Oklahoma's won four in a row. They're not the same team this year. That class that won four in a row has obviously graduated. So they're a younger team. They've lost more games this year than they have in probably 9 years. But they're still really good. And so really the last couple of years, it's been like, do you take Oklahoma or the field? I'd say this year Oklahoma is part of the field, but then it's like you also don't want to count them out. You know, Texas A&M's probably going to be the number one overall seed, but then Alabama won a game in that series in College Station and really could have won the series. That was back in kind of, I guess, mid-March when Alabama basketball was playing in Cleveland. So then I'm like, is Texas A&M really that good? Will they win the national title? Tennessee has one of the best pitchers in the country, Carlin Pickens. They've never won a national title in softball. They went to Oklahoma City a couple years ago, but they seem to, I mean, Alabama beat them last year in Supers. They seem to choke a little bit in the postseason. So I don't know if they're going to have what it takes to make it all the way to the championship. I don't know. This is a bad answer for Everett. It's like, a lot of people have thought all year would be Texas, but then they got swept by Oklahoma. So I don't know. Maybe we'll go with Texas for now, and I'll say that, and they'll probably lose today and then look like crap in the NCAA tournament.
Don't worry. There's no penalty for being wrong. We're not at any gambling window here. Katie Windham, we missed you last week, so I think I don't want to step on it. Go ahead, Mason. Yeah. Okay. We missed you last week, and we were talking about NFL draft. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
I didn't know where we wanted to go. We had. Okay.
That's my fault. I thought we were almost telekinesis, but we weren't.
Well, you know, we had talked about the little bit of saving stuff. Maybe if we have time, we'll get into that too. But yes, NFL draft. Really, I guess just get your reaction, because what did we have the opportunity to talk about any of it at all? Yeah, just get, I guess, your reaction to, you know, the first round surprises that we had, and then really the rest of the draft, which I think kind of played out the ways we expected for the Alabama guys.
I'm sorry, Mason.
Yeah, I did not expect Tyler Booker to be drafted that high, but good for him. I'm glad a team like believed in him enough to pick him that high. He seemed like he was real fired up to go to the Cowboys. So I think that'll be good for him. Jahad Campbell obviously could not have worked out better for him I'm sure he would have liked to get drafted higher in the first round, but as far as where he ended up, being a kid that grew up an hour from Philly, a team that's going to be a Super Bowl contender, you know, I would think I don't keep up as much with the NFL, but I would think, you know, for years to come, the Eagles are at least going to be in that conversation. So, you know, good for those two guys. I talked with Hunter on a just a minute that we did about how many guys would get drafted in the first round of, it could be three, it could be one, it could be two, it could be zero. But like the most likely number was kind of two. It was like Jalen Milroe was there. Will a team take a gamble on him? But then obviously there was all the drama with Shadur. So, you know, I think Jalen ended up in a good spot. Robbie Utes was kind of a surprise to the draft for me. I didn't think he would get drafted that high, but clearly the Seahawks have some like vision in mind for him that they've been talking about wanting him to be more of that fullback. So good for him, because I feel like that's not as common of a position, you know, in the NFL or college anymore. So I think there was it was a little surprising maybe that Utes got drafted and CJ Dupree didn't. I had done our little profile or our pre-draft profiles on the players. I'd done the one on Burnup, and he'd been projected to get drafted, you know, by a lot of people, but, you know, it's kind of better. I feel like sometimes for punters when they don't, cause they have a little more say maybe in where they want to go. And it seems like he's pretty fired up to go to New Orleans. So, yeah, I guess overall a successful draft for Alabama, maybe not as many first round picks as we saw consistently in the Saban era, but I mean, we all knew going in there wouldn't be. So the streak continues to first round picks. A lot of guys, I think, found good spots. And so, I think y'all talked about it on the show. Next year's draft is really going to be interesting to see where some Alabama guys end up and who can really up their stock this year and who can answer some question marks on themselves and things like that.
Yeah, Kenny Windham, we'll just go right there. Is Caden Proctor going to be the first overall pick, or we'll just widen it a little bit? A top five pick in next year's draft?
I feel like tackles have been so weird for Alabama, because some guys, like you think about like an Evan Neal that was like, he was, you know, at the time he was talked about being a number one overall pick, and then his like ended up being a little bit of a flop in the NFL. I think I saw recently that he's like moving to guard. You know, J.C. Latham was a high pick. I'm trying to think of some like the older back in the day guys. I think one of the Quanjos was like a top 15 pick, had a decent NFL career. But I feel like it's so hit or miss. Obviously, Caden Proctor, since he was his size is just like so, his physical size, like the way God has made him is like so like built for the NFL. But then he has had such a unique career, obviously. And so, yeah, I think I saw some tweet about how he's going to be like the most controversial, you know, prospect for next season. So we'll see. Maybe he will. I hopefully for his sake this season he'll be able, and for Alabama's sake, you know, he'll play well enough that it'll kind of solidify that, yeah, he is a top 10, top 5, top 3 worthy draft pick for some team that needs a big old offensive tackle.
We've been having a lot of fun this week on the program, Katie, talking about next year's schedule. Once again, we thank Katie for her time. Go follow Katie Windham at @KatieWindham_ on the Twitter machine, leading all of our coverage at BamaCentral.com. We've been talking about next year's schedule, talking about what is a trap game? What is a dangerous road game? Obviously, everybody sees the trip to Athens because of the team on the field, but maybe just psychologically in the mind. What do you see next year as maybe some pitfalls for Alabama as far as the road games go? We know what happened last year on the road. How could Alabama maybe improve, or what should they look out for on the road in 2025?
I think that South Carolina game is going to be really tricky because, you know, that was a game South Carolina literally could have won at the last second. And I remember at the time, Alabama fans were pretty, like, irate because just the Vanderbilt game had been, what, the week before? And so they're thinking South Carolina is this bad team that Alabama should just kill, I think kind of thinking in the past mindset. And then obviously the Gamecocks turned out to be pretty good last year, kind of a fringe playoff team as well. So, you know, that's going to be a team with a returning quarterback, right? So
Lenora Sellers.
You know, anytime you have that in the SEC, it helps. That's a pretty – that can be a pretty wild environment. Last time Alabama played there in 2019, I guess, they just kind of jumped on them early and kind of were able to shut the crowd up. That was the hottest I think I've ever been in a football game because their stadium is just kind of down like in a sun pit. It was so hot. But I guess this year I'll be in the press box, so that'll be nice. But – and then, you know, obviously Nick Saban, greatest college coach of all time, won 6 national championships. He just had trouble in Jordan-Hare for whatever reason. Year or, you know, every other year after every other year, going down there, either losing, barely winning. I mean, the last 2 Iron Bowls in Auburn have been, what, both times Auburn was 6-5, I think?
Just silly games.
Really, like,
preposterous football
games. The one I'll never really be able to get over is 2021 when, like, you have literally Bryce Young as your quarterback, and Alabama had 3 points with a minute left.
Against TJ Finley.
And yes, it was like, how did this, like, this happen that the offense is what's the issue in this game that, like, they can't, like, it was just nuts. And then, you know, everyone knows what happened last time with 4th-and-31. And then, you know, the time, the 3 or 4 times before that, Alabama lost. So will DeBoer have the same issues or will he be like, this team's bad. We're better. We're going to win. Now, their road record last year would say not necessarily. But I think this is more his team. And so that's kind of – will the Jordan-Hare voodoo affect Kalen DeBoer as much as it affected Nick Saban? I don't even know if it – like, what – did that affect Nick Saban or what? It just never made sense to me. I was like – I remember that 2021 season. I was like, okay. Because at that point, Alabama had lost 2 in a row and Auburn had lost 3 of the last 4. But like that Alabama team was just so much better. Had Bryce Young, he was just rolling. I was like, Alabama should win this game easily. And then that was, I guess, the first Iron Bowl I covered for Bama Central. And I'm up in that corner press box in Auburn. And I just, they had 3 points with like a minute left. And I was like, how did this happen again? But then obviously Bryce did work a little bit of his magic.
3rd-and-10 incompletion. And Bryce just smiles big, like, meh.
Yeah. That was probably the most like collective reaction I've ever heard in a press box is that the touchdown at the end of regulation to tie it. Just because it was like, you know, there's no cheering in the press box, but it was kind of like everyone gasps just because it's like, it's this shocking moment of just so contrary to how the rest of that game had gone. But so, yeah, I think kind of South Carolina and Auburn and then obviously Georgia. I mean, All of them, I think, are going to have their challenges. And especially, you know, we saw last year they really struggled on the road. And it wasn't even necessarily environment-based because obviously it's been well-documented. Vanderbilt is – there's more Alabama fans there. So we'll see.
You mentioned Nick Saban as a part of that discussion, talking about Jordan-Hare going down there and struggling. I want to ask you about Nick Saban and his current dealings now. The news comes out this week that Saban will be co-chairing this a commission, I guess, to investigate NIL and college football and come up with some sort of solution. I really just want to ask your take whether or not you think that the people who are kind of chastising Saban for doing this is like, oh, you're just trying to protect college football. You're trying to protect the brands. You know, do you think that Saban is, you know, in the best interest of the sport trying to make these decisions or just kind of in that camp of trying to protect the system, I guess, as you could say it?
I don't really think if he's just trying to protect the system, I don't really see why this would be like worth his time. Like there's something I saw on Facebook the other day, which I know a lot of stuff on Facebook is fake, but it was from, I think it was from Forbes. It was talking about how much money his car dealerships make. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man is 100 millionaire. So like he could be sitting back on the beach every day, which that's what I would be doing if I was him. You know, he chooses to do other things, but I mean, I think he does go to the beach and the lake a lot, but
as he should.
Yeah, for sure. I think he does have the interest with the players and the sport in mind, because when y'all, before I got on, y'all were talking about the players used to get taken advantage of. And I think a lot of them still are, just in a different way. They're getting taken advantage of by predatory agents that are giving them bad advice, taking too much of their money, telling them, you know, you have the leverage in the situation, and then they don't. So then they enter the portal, and then they don't have anywhere to go, or they end up getting less money. And so there's issues all around college football, and it's been like this since really NIL was enacted, and it's been great. The guys have been able to make money. It makes me a little sick sometimes when I think about, like, a third string offensive lineman makes more in a month than I do in a year. But, you know, good for them for the way they were, you know, how big they are, that they can, you know,
have good for them for being born.
Yeah. That they make all this money and then don't have any expenses either. Because, look, as somebody who's known a lot of student athletes over the years, even pre-NIL, especially a place like Alabama, they were well taken care of. Okay. All their schools paid for their housing. They got a stipend every month anyway. All the food they want, like, football wise, not every sport, football. I mean, most other sports got a lot of that stuff too. but if it had originally been what it was supposed to be, if guys can make money off their name, image, and likeness, they can go sign autographs for money, they can sell jerseys with their name on it, they can sell t-shirts, they can do camps with their name and charge kids to come, whatever. Which, this is a side note, it always makes me laugh when, like, we go cover, like, a player doing, like, a camp in the summer, and, like, the news stations are like, this is what NIL is all about, like, giving back. And I'm like, giving back by charging kids $100, $200, $300 for this, like, giving back. So that's a side note. If they're doing it for free, then, like, yeah, that is giving back. But when they're charging kids to come to their camp just because their name is XYZ, like, is that really giving back?
Football camp, $400.
Yeah. Because, like, Alabama has done football camps every summer for forever, you know, that they can come meet the players and whatever. But, but the problem was, it was never going to be that because there was never any regulations. So Texas A&M booster could tell a guy, I'll give you $1 million for your autograph. And Texas booster could say, I'll give you $1.5 million. And that's kind of what it's been. It's like, if we can outbid you, we can give you more. Like, it needs help. It needs regulations. And I think Saban does have the sport and the player's best interest in mind. He developed relationships with these guys for decades. And, like, he could choose to completely wipe his hands of this and just be kicked back on the beach. And where's their house in Jupiter or whatever? Like, you know, so he wouldn't be doing this if it was just the interest of putting, like, more money in people's pockets. Like, I don't think Nick Saban is a saint. Like, I don't think he does everything with pure motivations. But I think this is with, like, the best interest of the sport and the players in mind, because he, like, there's things like the, you know, with the house settlement of, will there be walk-ons or not? I don't think that's best for the sport. I don't think that's best for all those kids who have been walk-ons that, you know, some of them are walk-ons because their family gives a lot of money to the school. Some of them are walk-ons because they work really hard. And some of the times walk-ons become, I mean, we all know stories of players at schools all over the country that are walk-ons and then become, like,
Levi Wallace
University. So I don't think that's best for the sport. And so it has already had so many negative ramifications. There's been a lot of great things for guys that have been able to take care of their families. You know, just make money for themselves. But there's also been a lot of negative things as well.
We've had a lot of fun this morning with Katie Windham. You follow her at @KatieWindham_ on the Twitter machine. She leads all of our coverage on BamaCentral.com, writing football, men's and women's basketball, softball, baseball, gymnastics, literally every sport at the capstone. Katie Windham is covering it. So follow her at @KatieWindham_. Katie, we appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. That's Katie Windham joining us. She's going to have a great day, and so will you. We are going to get out of here for the day. Leave us a comment at @JoeGaither6, @MAWoods_, @KatieWindham_. Call us on the voicemail machine at 205-462-7340, extension 800. call Derek Daniel, go see Warren Tire, get your car taken care of with Warren Tire. Make sure you're properly covered insurance-wise with Derek Daniel. We're going to get out of here for the day. We're going to talk to you again tomorrow on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.